We have a lot of public health professionals here. 13,000, I believe, or approaching 14,000. We're all working in many diverse and eclectic places in public health, and we all feel that our issues are the most important. But part of bringing, championing public health is bringing attention to it. It's not just about compiling data. It's turning that data into action, which turns into better health outcomes. And the media is plays an important role in that. And I've always felt that media, as Ezra Klein, a great reporter, formerly from the Washington Post, now at Vox, said, is media can be just as effective a change agent as policymakers. I strongly believe that to be true. But part of the challenge is creating the right story that can get the media to understand why public health is important, why what we're doing is so critical, and to affect change. And so we have four dynamite speakers here today who are going to talk about what resonates with them, how we the media can tell your story to affect change. So I'll just briefly introduce our four speakers. Immediately to my left is Bonnie Miller Rubin from the Chicago Tribune. I don't have a list of the awards that you've won, but Bonnie is an extremely decorated reporter. I think I read something about Pulitzer?
Yeah, that was way back in 2001 when we had a lot more resources to do stories, but thank you. I was part of a very large team. I would never want to take credit. Totally. Thank you, Bill, for mentioning it. My mother would be very proud.
This is being recorded, so
okay.
Everyone will know. Two bodies left is Stephen Johnson with Modern Healthcare Magazine. To Stephen's left is Shannon Heffernan from WBEZ FM Chicago. So we have a real power team of Chicago media here. And also to Shannon's left is Jonathan Pirtle, who is actually a public health professional. An assistant professor at Drexel University, but also has a running column in the Philadelphia Inquirer. So he's kind of in your space, and he's going to share tips on how he was able to bring public health into the media and tips for how you to do it, for you to do it. So without further ado, Bonnie, the floor is yours.
Thank you so much. Wow, this is a great turnout. Thank you so much. We all in the media have a little bit of an ego, so otherwise we wouldn't have done this. So I'm really thrilled that if we work this hard to get our presentations together, there's such a nice turnout. So I've been a journalist for 40 years. I started during recess, and I've been at the Chicago Tribune for 25 years. Can everybody hear me okay and everything? Good. Okay. So I would say in my 25 years at the Tribune, I have been contacted by our public health agency here in Chicago maybe twice. And that really says something. One was the measles outbreak, I think in 2014, that was in the northern suburbs here. And maybe there was something with HIV/AIDS. But the point is that I never hear from you. And it's very crisis-driven, and there's all these great stories in between. And all of us can tell you, this will be a theme that's going to come up again and again, is we're all very short-handed. So the more you can pitch us a completely terrific story that's fresh and you haven't seen 100 times before, the more we're going to like be so eager to jump on that story. So I'm going to do five things I wish public health people knew about approaching the media. Number one is, and I'm going to save you a whole lot of money, 4 years of journalism school, I can boil it down into five questions. So, like, here's a journalism degree on the house, okay? What's the story about? Number one. And if you can't articulate that, like, you know, you've heard the phrase, an elevator pitch. If you can't articulate that, than to your colleagues, to your boss, to whatever. And chances are you can't get an articulate that to me, and then I in turn don't know what the story is about to tell my bosses. So everybody here has to sell things up the line, our chain of command. So we're all in sales, okay? So what's the story about? What's the key point? Why does it matter? So that's really important. Why is it relevant to Chicago Tribune readers or Modern Healthcare or WBEZ listeners? And what does it say about life, the world, and these times we live in? That's kind of a bonus question. If you get the first three, I won't hold you on the fourth. But, you know, let's say I'm going to mention alcohol a lot because I think alcohol is a hugely underreported story. Something about maybe, what does it say about life, the world, and these times we live in? Maybe it has to do with the culture of alcohol on campus, or how that touches on so many things, whether that's sexual assault, whether, you know, domestic violence, whatever. I'm really struck, I mean, I'm old, but I'm not that old, that how much alcohol is a piece of any young person's get-together. Even churches and congregations are saying that they can't interest young people unless they say, you know, come for a wine and cheese or something. So it's like alcohol has to be a big part of a lot of things. So that would be the, what does it say about life in the world in these times we live in? And if you get those, I'm all ears on this pitch. Okay, so that was, my Journalism 101 was point number one. Number two, I desperately need a face to help tell the story. There is a reason why the United Way, for example, when it's their annual campaign, it's like Jane Doe was homeless a year ago, but now she's got a Harvard law degree or something like that. We desperately can't tell stories about your agency or about your mission unless you can help us find people. And I'll tell you a personal story that happened to me not that long ago. The Alzheimer's, is anybody here from the Alzheimer's Association? Okay, this is just between us, okay? The Alzheimer's Association contacted me about some key legislation that was happening in Springfield, at the state legislature. And it had to do with laundering with dementia and Alzheimer's patients. And we have something here, and I think most states do, called an Amber Alert when somebody has been kidnapped, child abduction. Well, they worked really, really hard on another kind of alert that goes out on the highways or tollways or expressways, wherever, whatever they call them, where you're from. And it alerts motorists to the fact that there is a senior who has, or dementia patient who's wandered away from their home. Great idea, right? Well, so I said, can you help me find somebody who has had wandering behavior? And their response was, oh, there's a lot of stigma attached with that. Stigma? I've written about HIV people who have, you know, wanted to come forward, certainly bipolar, depression. I didn't expect someone to say, well, we really can't connect you with a family because of the stigma. Most of the time, if this is an issue that's important to you and important to your clients or whatever constituents you have, they want to raise awareness on this. You know, if somebody's willing to be public about their, say, HIV or STD or something like that, I was so floored. So I called some of our best hospitals in Chicago, like Rush has a great Alzheimer's. No problem. We have a family support network, you know, that meets. So I got my person through Rush. But to just write about this legislation without being able to say something about how terrifying that is when someone has gone missing, So you can see how much more compelling a storytelling technique that is. I know you guys are stretched really, really thin. We're all stretched really thin. Everybody is doing more with less these days. And I know you're probably handling some FOIA requests from the annoying media, and your boss wants you to do something really lame like National Kidney Week, which we never. Whenever anybody calls me with, you know, Toenail Fungus Week or Rash Week or something like that, I say, when have you seen a story like that in the Chicago Tribune? That is bogus. That's artificial. You know it. We know it. Don't do it. So you know, you've got these lame requests from your boss. So, again, the more you can set the table for us, the more it's a win-win. So let's take a really overexposed topic like childhood obesity. Like if you call me and you say, let's do something on childhood obesity, and I'll say, okay, what about it? I mean, that's like I'm old enough to remember card catalogs where it would be a subject. Let's do something on marriage. Well, that's not a story pitch. Let's do something on, oh, you've got a program and you're going into some very low-income neighborhoods. And WBEZ just had a terrific story, I think, last week on really top chefs in Chicago, you know, four-star restaurants that were going into really low-income neighborhood Chicago public schools. And they were, instead of the usual, you know, fish sticks and horrible food that we all remember from our school cafeteria days, they were doing, these very high-end chefs were doing healthy food at the school cafeteria level for one day. That's a great story. It's got art possibilities, so we always have to, you'll get better play if you have a photo with it. It's about childhood obesity, but do you see the difference in the story? And I'd read that story, I certainly listen to that story, and I'm gonna guess that you would too. Another idea that is very common is suicide. Let's do something on suicide. Well, I had a story about a year ago that I had a tremendous response to, and it means just taking an idea and turning it the other way. So if everybody's going east, go west. If everybody's writing about suicide victims, I did a story on people who had attempted suicide and survived, and how they were a key part of suicide prevention. Now, it used to be that the suicide prevention groups didn't want to have anything to do with them because they were a reminder of people who had attempted. But here are people who had attempted and survived and were able to tell their story about how they got help and what they do when life became overwhelming. And that's just a much fresher angle on something that's been pretty well covered by the media. So the more you can come up with fresh ideas, the more you can set the table for us, it's just more of a win-win, and that helps us sell the story. And part of that is also people who want to be identified and are willing to be photographed. You can hear the story, the difference between, let's say I'm writing a story about schizophrenia. You know, Carol, comma, not her real name, comma. How do you know that I, as the writer, just didn't sit at my keyboard and just pull that out of thin air? We all of us here really care about credibility. We want to be credible to our readers and our listeners. And I'm not saying that people should be outed, but if you know a good story and that person doesn't want to be public, that's fine. But then you need to kind of maybe work the phones or look at your membership and see if there's another person who's going to say, yeah, I'm going to, because maybe my story will help somebody else. So that's a very big motivation for people who have things. And I think we can all take a page out of the LGBT handbook here. Until we knew that person in the church pew next to you, or the person in the cubicle next to you, or your neighbor, until we knew people that were gay, things didn't change. Just like until people are willing to raise their hand and talk about, you know, their particular mental health issue, or, you know, I had a baby at 15, and yet here's how I triumphed, and I got on the escalator, and I was able to go to college, and things like that. So, you know, go back to your membership, and I'm not saying you should coerce people into being public, because I think I can speak for my colleagues. Nobody wants somebody to be out that isn't ready to be out, but we do need real folks. Pay attention to the headlines of the day. If you want to know what a headline did for, say, breast cancer screening, look at Angelina Jolie. I mean, doctors were inundated with getting, finding out if their patients were calling to find out if they had a genetic predisposition to breast cancer. Shannon and I were just talking about Paul Ryan last week or a week ago, talking about, you know, he said that phrase, I cannot and will not spend time away from my family. A, the idea, the notion that came from a man, number one, and was that a game changer? I mean, any of you who have as one of your public health initiatives stress, you know, could have been on the phone and said, hey, let's talk about work-family balance here. Because Paul Ryan, this future Speaker of the House, just said that, and nobody, a woman, you know, can you imagine if, like, Hillary had said that when Chelsea was young? That would have been like, oh, no. So pay attention. Have those antennae out. And then I think my final point would be, you know, I said, know what we do and what we didn't do. I mentioned the certain, like, weeks, and this is flu prevention week and stuff like that. I want you to hear a really bad pitch that I got. And this was from someone that I just got it from late last week. A really cool idea, Bonnie, would be to dig into the similarities between veterans and mental health issues, and police and Chicago kids. Right away, I'm exhausted. Okay? one could argue the point that the Chicago Police Department and kids in bad neighborhoods are not unlike veterans in their exposure to trauma. Well, great idea to be thinking ahead. November 11th, we're gonna have a veteran story in the paper, probably on the front page. That's like for a research tank, you know, or like some kind of some kind of foundation. I'm not saying that we don't do our own research, we do, but we sure wouldn't do that 2 weeks before. And, you know, if, like, one of your groups did research on trauma, exposure to trauma, I mean, I know that's probably a healthy initiative that many public health departments, certainly, I know Chicago has that on their one of their 12 healthy Chicago initiatives. But we're not going to be the researchers for a story like that. But you guys do that. Say, this is what we found. Here's what we're in. And of course, you know, we like to see things published, you know, in Pediatrics Magazine, in this, in that, and that gives it that credibility that we all depend upon. But before you even pick up the phone or write a letter, kind of have an idea what we do and what we don't do. And that was an example of something that we just couldn't even get our arms around in a few weeks. So that just gives you a little bit about what I look for and what sails onto the front page and what doesn't make it out of my inbox. I get about 300 pitches a day. So, you know, make that message in that message field, you know, upcoming Veterans Day story. I'm looking for that now. I'm trolling for one of those. Anything that can make you kind of emerge from the crowd. We all are just trying to keep our heads above water. Our newsrooms have been decimated. I'm sure you've seen that in the size of your own hometown newspaper, how thin it is. So I hope that that's been helpful. And if you have any questions, you know, feel free. Are we going to do questions at the end?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So thank you so much.
Just a couple things before we continue. So there are obviously going to be a number of lessons from this panel, and also questions. So please share your favorite lessons and ask questions through the hashtag APHA15. I'm looking at them, and at the end, I can take some of the best questions before we get to the audience Q&A. So please let us know your favorite highlights of this session. After this, Stephen, Shannon, and Jonathan, you can just come right on up consecutively. I won't intervene after that. Thanks.
Good morning, everyone. I'm going to speak with you regarding our publication, Modern Healthcare, which is slightly different from Bonnie's and from Shannon's in the sense that we're a trade publication. So our focus is a little different. It's a little more narrow, and we focus more on our key demographic are healthcare executives, hospital executives. They make up 91% of hospital executives read Modern Healthcare. It's their go-to source for information, for research, for analysis. So just to tell you a little bit about Modern Healthcare, like I said, we have about a circulation of about 70,000 we have a print, we print weekly our magazine, and we also have an online, we also have a website. And we have about 600,000 people registered to our website, about nearly a million hits a month to the website. Not a lot in comparison to other publications, but like I said, our key demographic are the people that you want, you know, to know. I mean, healthcare executives, people who have interest in what we write about and can make some decisions in terms of decisions that they make. I guess some of the points that I'd like to make in terms of what we look for in terms of stories, I mean, kind of follow along the lines of what Bonnie just said regarding some of our issues. You know, I write public health. I've written public health for about 2 years for Modern Healthcare. I started out as a government reporter at a local paper in the northern suburbs of here. For a while, covering, and that covered cops, courts, all, you know, the whole way. And the interesting thing about public health now, what I see from our perspective, is that there's a higher demand for public health stories these days, given the changing healthcare landscape. Our health providers want to know how we can collaborate with public health agencies and want to look for examples as to how that works and for a variety of concerns. I mean, one which has to do with, you know, the whole trend towards population health. I mean, as health providers have to look more towards how they, you know, pay for things or how to save on costs as opposed to just charging, you know, fee for service. Their issues are, well, how, you know, what can be the best plans that I can make in order to, this is going to save me a cost. One of which is addressing social determinants of health. I did a story last year regarding this issue, regarding how, you know, some hospitals are looking at how to just provide temporary shelter for homeless people. Has saved them a lot of money in terms of emergency department costs because they're high utilizers of these services. But that came about by a pitch that was given to me by a health provider who gave a perfect pitch, was demonstrated a problem, instituted an issue, or gave me an issue that I could expound upon, not just what they're doing, but then also gave me a solution. And I think that's what we're basically looking for in terms of when we see pitches, is that, you know, pitch your idea, but don't pitch your agency, pitch the issue in hand. So if you know there's an issue that you're addressing and do some sort of initiative and such, have that up front, so I can see that, okay, this is something like, whether it has to do with childhood obesity or has to do with, smoking initiatives, what have you. It's important that, we can broaden the scope of the issue, not just through your, what you're doing or through what your, initiative is, but, to make it so that all of our readers can take something from it. I guess what I'd say is that, in terms of pitching a story, I guess to follow up on some of the things that Barnes was saying regarding pitching a story, just know who your target is. I mean, I can't tell you how many times that I have gotten pitches from people who, I've gotten pitches from people who didn't know that we were actually a healthcare magazine, which is interesting. I can't tell you how many times I've gotten pitches from people saying, our book about how relationships can deal with, we've never done anything like that at all. But since we are since our entire focus is healthcare, then it would be helpful to, if you can just go through our publication, read some articles, from people. If you have a specific angle that you want someone to address, it means, for instance, if it has to do with health IT, if it has to do with Medicaid, if it has to do, with the issue that you're wanting to present, find the person who's been writing the articles recently on that issue. Seek that person out. Just read through some of our some of their articles, and then form your pitch accordingly. It would help, because it will help when you help narrow the target, then it gets to the right person quicker, and then and it piques our interest, because then we know that, okay, this person has done their homework a bit. Other publications, as other media is concerned, we are under increasingly tight deadlines, trying to work with more with less, as all of you are. When you pitch to us, one thing I would like to say is that, don't constantly keep calling, asking about, what the status is of the story once you've pitched it along. We will get to it, or if not, we won't. But I mean, it doesn't serve your purpose, by just constant calls and what have you, and constant emails. I mean, once you've pitched it, we got the idea, we'll look at it. We can make our decisions, and we'll get back to you when we do. Also, when you pitch something, it always helps to have. Be able to offer extra help or recommendations as to who else to talk to, or have face to a certain issue or to a certain initiative that you're doing. When I first started out writing public health, I did write about public health agencies and such. I think maybe the first half a dozen stories I wrote regarding. Had to do with one singular issue about how public health agencies are, how their budgets are being strained, and how they're having to do more with less, which is fine. I mean, which was important to our readers. But after about maybe the sixth or seventh, story in that regard, my editor started looking at me and like, well, okay, what else? I mean, you've covered this issue quite a lot, then. What else can you provide? I mean, how are they dealing with this issue? So, I guess from my perspective, if you pitch something along, in terms of like how you're getting over these issues in terms of budget shortage and stuff, things that you're doing to address these issues that are not going away in terms of various public health problems, that's important to that's important to us and important to our readers. As I said before, since our focus is on health providers and hospitals, I like to tailor stories toward how they can make these collaborations with public health agencies in terms of public health. You know, we have a number of examples in terms of, you know, whether it's addressing, you know, something like homelessness or obesity, infant mortality, I mean, those types of issues, how public health agencies and health providers and private sector have gotten together to work on initiatives that, you know, that help bring down issue. One example to me is I wrote a story on infant mortality last year, and the state of Maryland had a very interesting initiative that helped to bring down the rate in terms of infant mortality in that state. You know, so things like that. I mean, if you have interesting ideas that have proven results, that some sort of metrics, that is something that we're interested in seeing. I mean, in terms of, you know, if you've gotten to, you know, it's, I guess one of our features is best practices, and so we're always interested in hearing, you know, if you have an initiative that's shown that works and that you're having good results, we always like to hear things like that. I mean, just a kind of a broad issue as to, yeah, we like for you to do something on, you know, this problem of, you know, say, you know, smoking or what have you. I mean, you know, we've done that. We've been there. We've done that. We, you know, there's not really much for us to go cover in that in that perspective, unless you have a new interesting angle to present to us. I guess you know, when you get straight to the point. You know, in your if you pitch a story via email or via telephone, you know, yeah, just get straight to the point with us in terms of what you would like. Would you like to pitch? Oftentimes, you know, when I read these email pitches, you know, it's like this. It's, you know, I see these whole long narratives. You know, just thinking about it is getting me frustrated. the person has good intentions, and their issue might be valid, but they read, you know, they write these whole long diatribes, like about, you know, and not getting to the point until like maybe the, you know, next to last graph, and it's just like, well, you know, I already lost focus after the third graph. I mean, because I got to move on. You know, our deadlines are such that, you know, from my publication, you know, we publish every day. You know, 1 o'clock is our deadline, 2:30 is our deadline, and then 4 o'clock is another deadline. And then, and then 3 days a week, we also publish another newsletter that goes out. Our deadline is 11:30. So oftentimes we will call and with the idea, saying that, yeah, I'd like to talk with such so-and-so about this particular issue, and I only have about 45 minutes, you know, before my deadline. It's helpful to us. We understand that you guys are bogged down, you guys are busy, and so, you know, I guess maybe it's us dreaming to think that, oh yeah, you have someone readily available, here you go, you know, but you know, if you could, working with, you know, press, you know, in a way where if you can provide someone with someone quickly or someone, you know, fairly quickly for us, I mean, I think it builds a good relationship. And I think that's what we're all looking for, is building good relationships between public health and reporters in order to, you know, because once you have that trust established, then if you pitch something, yours is going to come to the top of my priority list, above all, you know, someone who I've never met. A very helpful thing is when, if you're in town for something, such as, you know, this, you know, just have a talk, you know, invite, you know, pitch, you know, and write to us, email us, and say, hey, you know, we're in town, why don't we stop over and just have a talk, you know, for, you know, 10, 15 minutes. You know, we, you know, a lot of healthcare providers do that. They want to come over just to kind of, you know, give us some background as to what they're here about and what they're hearing. I mean, we love to hear that. I mean, you know, so, you know, having face-to-face, you know, putting it face to a name is, you know, for our purposes is great, because we usually end up getting like 3 or 4 stories out of just that basic conversation without them really knowing about it. But, I mean, we, you know, just based on things that they might have said haphazard, we just, you know, we pick up on it and we write about it. I guess some of the other issues then, I guess, that I think for us, would help us immensely and would help you immensely in terms of getting your, you know, your ideas out, is have a narrative. Have a kind of a story that you can lay out that shows why is this important? Why is this important to you? Why is this important? Why should I take, you know, feel that this is important to me? As been said, I mean, having a person, an actual person, who this is affecting or who this is impacting is a perfect way to get in. As with other publications, we love to have a name with a person that we can, talk to and see who this is affecting. Other issues. I mean, I suppose that if you, addressing other things such as HIV population, things like that. I mean, I guess what. Also say is that when pitching stories, it's been said, be concise, get to the point, so things. But know who and what you want out of it, out of when you pitch something. I mean, and when I say that, I mean that, just don't come with a broad, say, hey, we would like for you, we have this idea, and then we'd like you to pitch it, Help us out a little bit, because we, like I said, our newsroom is like any other newsroom. We, we don't have many, we have the same budgetary issues as everyone else, in terms of lack of reporters and such, and just lack of time. So be respectful of our time, and we're respectful of yours. I guess I would just close by saying that, I mean, this is a very great opportunity, in these times right now, because, like I said before, our readership is looking at these issues of public health more than any other time. Because of ACA, because of the changing landscape of healthcare. This is the time, where, anything that you pitch to us, that if you can target it in a way that's going to be impactful to our readership, mainly healthcare executives, is going to be a great way to get their attention. And it's going to be a great way for them to maybe affect some sort of decision making on their part. We've seen stories where we've written where we've gotten feedback from some of our readership where they said, oh, we saw this initiative and started here. We're looking, we'd like to find some more information about how we can establish a similar type of a program. So just keep that in mind, that we are looking to, our readership is narrow. It is healthcare executives, but, in terms of public health, we're always looking to see try to see how we can work that bridge between public health agencies and healthcare executives, because we think it's a very valuable link to establish to establish real change. So with that, thank you very much.
So I got a feeling that some of the most interesting things that will happen in this conversation will be driven by questions you all are going to ask, and Bonnie and Stephen have already covered a lot of the things I would say, so I'm going to breeze through some of this stuff pretty quickly here. I'm going to talk first of all a little bit about pitching a story, but then I also want to get into a little bit about, someone's interested in your story, if a reporter calls you up on the phone and has a question to ask you, some ways that you can do well in an interview to make yourself look good and to get the word out there well. So first, on pitching a story, I affirm everything they say about how busy reporters' lives are. And the first question you should always ask when calling a reporter, are you on deadline? Because they may have to turn something around in 30 minutes. Right? And they're not going to be listening to you if you're talking and they're on deadline. So first question is, are you on deadline? And if they are, when can I call you back when you're off deadline? Because you're going to get much much more focus on what you're saying if you can get a reporter when they're not on a tight turnaround. The second thing I would say is don't just think about pitching stories. Think about developing yourself as a source that people go to when something's happening in the news. So if you see a headline, you're like, hey, I got something to say about that. Maybe you don't have a fully formed story,
but you can be the person that that reporter goes to for their expert quote. Fit yourself as that. And be ready to take that call when the reporter calls you on a 30-minute deadline and they need somebody to speak to nutrition in urban environments or whatever the topic is that they're reporting out. The third thing I would say is health stories are not always health stories. You've heard about how newsrooms are shrinking. There's places that don't have health reporters anymore, or their health reporter is overburdened with a ton of stories they're already doing. Could your story be a political story that a political reporter would take up? Could your story be a story about education? Could your story be a story about poverty, the environment, science? What other reporters would cover your story that aren't health reporters? And I think this is important for two reasons, because one, you have more reporters that you can pitch to, and second of all, you have a broader audience you can get to. In today's media landscape, a lot of people don't sit down with a newspaper and read the whole thing. They go to the headlines that they know or the reporters that they follow. So if you can get out of that box of health reporting, you're going to reach a different audience. You're going to be reaching people that you haven't talked to before. So ask yourself, to you it may be a health story, but can it be a story that's not a health story too? Am I going too fast? Is this good, everybody? Okay. All right. Be ready to help the reporter think through access. Yes, what they said about if you have a character in hand, that's fantastic. Some reporters, I like to find my own sources, and so sometimes what I need help with is like, okay, so what are the ethical and legal issues I'm gonna face when I'm looking for this kind of person? And having you help me walk through that so I can do it well will be very useful to me, because sometimes those ethical traps or those legal traps are things that may be in our blind spots because we haven't been looking at this as closely or regularly as you have. Okay, so now I'm gonna skip to talk about being interviewed. The first thing I would say is do your best to talk like yourself. Now that sounds really easy, and I know a lot of you in this room are right now saying, well, yeah, I like always talk like myself. That's what I do, it's fine. I don't need to prepare to do that. Yes, you do. When you get in a room with a reporter, especially if they're in broadcast, I'm in public radio, something happens to people, I don't know what, but they like stiffen up and suddenly all the jargon comes out, right? And there's a lot of like talking points and suddenly you all sound the same. And the thing is, like, you're interesting people and you know how to talk to humans. Like, you tell people at a bar what you do for a job, right? When you're out on a date or at dinner, you tell folks what you're looking at and what's interesting to you. And the voice you do that in, do that with reporters too, especially in broadcast. Don't worry about sounding official, because when you sound that way, often the person who's listening to you on the radio, on the TV, is going to be like, rah, 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 rah. Okay, off, done, right? So don't be afraid to be yourself. And don't be afraid to be even a character, right? If there's something that brought you to this work, having your own personal story as part of it is really useful. I found this is really especially true with when I talk to researchers or policy people, because that stuff can be so incredibly important, but also so incredibly stiff to talk about. So if I can get somebody talking about why, how they came to that work, it puts it in a different space that's going to make it easier for me to translate it to our audience's ears. And this is a point especially for people who do policy or research. Before you get to me, simplify, simplify, simplify. Take out the jargon. If you can find a metaphor that explains your work, give me that metaphor, because if you don't simplify, I'm going to simplify for you, right? Because I have to. It's my job to make sure that whatever I say to the audience is something they can understand. And you want to be the one simplifying, not me, because you know this way better than I do. So simplify, simplify, simplify. Now, you can give me all the complicated background and let me know it, so as I'm writing the story, I understand the breadth and the nuance of what you're talking about, but also be prepared to say it in some short snippets. Give me the metaphor that you think does work. Give me the language that you think does work, and it's going to make my job a lot easier, and it's going to make you sound a lot better. Yeah, basically I would say the more of those things you can do yourself, the less you're going to be depending on the reporter to do that, and that keeps you in control. The final thing I would say, and I feel like other reporters may strangle me for saying this, but like don't wait for us, You don't need to wait for us anymore. We're in a different media landscape. You can be out there on social media. You can be out there on blogs. That's good for you to communicate yourself out there, but it's also how you develop yourself as a source. It's how I'm going to find you and how you might get into the journalistic publications, too. And on that note, I want to hand it over.
So look at your, if you've just done some kind of annual survey or something like that, and you see something that's like kind of sticking out, chances are, even if you're not sure, call us because you've developed a relationship. Call us and we'll say, hey, I think that, you know, we're seeing this go way up or this has really dropped. And then it will be up to us to figure out the why behind that.
One other question before we turn it over to the audience. If you look out into the crowd, all of us are seeing people on their smartphones typing away. Maybe they're typing questions using the APHA hashtag. But they could be looking at anything. So social media has obviously been a game changer in the media. So if the four of you could each talk about how social media has changed what you do or it's how it's become a part of your everyday routines and how the audience can use social media to connect with you or to their advantage to pitch a story.
I'm on Twitter, and I'm old, so that's like really something that I was slow to come to. I like beautifully well-crafted paragraphs, not 140 characters, and that's probably the reason that a lot of us got into writing is because we'll read a beautiful piece and we'll go, wow, that's really nice. And so there's been a learning curve. But that said, I see a lot of ideas on Twitter. And feel free, I'm at VM Rubin, Connie Miller Rubin, so help me up my numbers. That'll help with at job review time. So all the people have mentioned tight deadlines. Part of that is because we're updating some stories online throughout the day. So when the Chicago Department of Public Health held a press conference last year on this measles outbreak that I mentioned, you know, I had a tweet from the press conference, and that's hard because I want to make sure I have every detail nailed down. And it's really been a relearning for me to realize, like, okay, it's okay to let just the first paragraph go. It was at New Horizons Daycare Center in Buffalo Grove, or this or that, and then fill in the blanks later. But that's something that's, we're constantly updating and. So that's probably been the single biggest change for me with social media.
I would agree. I think using social media as a source is something that I've been slow to pick up on when I first started, but it's something that now that I depend on, every day, I just, am constantly checking Twitter just to see if there's a post, if someone puts up something that, is of interest. I mean, I know it can be difficult, in the limited amount of space you have to put all your points in place in terms of why this is important, but it's been a very valuable source for us, if there's something that we may have missed, that something comes out from a specific hospital or a provider or something, then we're constantly on it, and we're constantly also, throughout the day, we're also posting our own stories.
I throw out questions to social media sometimes, especially if I'm trying to find a specific kind of source or the right person for something, like who knows this, who knows somebody who's this. And so that's been really useful. And so it's also a way, I think, to develop yourself as a source, is to find the journalist that you want to pitch to, follow them on Twitter, they're likely to follow you back, and then you have that online relationship where you can see what one another are talking about.
So what we've done is we've tweeted at people. We write about in our blog post. So for example, if we wrote about a particular study, we would then tweet at the author of that study or their institution, and then they tweet it out like through their networks. So it's something, it takes time, and we haven't done as much as we would probably like to. But when we do have time, sit down and be like, okay, I'm going to tweet this post we just wrote at these 15 different people who this is relevant to.
And one other thing I wanted to add was, I should have put it in my presentation. There are a couple things that really frustrate me personally. One is jurisdiction. I don't understand, like, going back to the measles story, you know, what falls under the city public health department, what falls under county, what falls under state, and again, these tight deadlines that we're on, I would call, like, the Cook County Department of Public Health, and they'd say, oh, no, that's, you have to go to the city on that.
Yeah, sometimes I don't think they understand it either.
Right. I think you could be right. This jurisdiction, we don't care. We don't care. You know, if you know something, but you're afraid politically, like, oh, wait a minute, that falls in the city's ballpark, not mine. You know, we just don't have time to make calls to tons of different people. We just want to know, is this happening? Is this not happening? Silos, bad. Bad, bad, bad. I'm sure you deal with that in your job all the time. And also acronyms. What is it about public health and acronyms? So those are more pet peeves. If you don't, I don't know what that acronym is.
Public health and the government. We have a lot of folks for questions. If you would not mind stepping to the front, this microphone is not going too far, but in fact, it may not even be working at this point. So you can stay seated, just make sure to project as loud as you can, and we'll get to, we have about 10, 15 minutes for questions. So gentlemen over here, if you could stand up and ask.
Sure. I'm assuming this hasn't changed, but every time an article gets written, I usually get phone calls from somebody else going, oh, you know, Bonnie left this part out, or Shannon didn't get that part right. In terms of follow-ups, I always tell them, too bad. It's done, it's filed, it's over. And, you know, the best we can hope is that maybe in a month or so we can find a different reporter to do something. Is that?
I love follow-ups. I love feedback. Okay. I mean, I do think it's a reporter-to-reporter thing, especially if you got something wrong. I mean, I think with leaving stuff out, often you're going to hear back, I had to be in a half minute, something had to go. But if we got something wrong, we should be held accountable for that. And if we left something out that's significant enough that it changes the shape of the story, I fully advocate you holding journalists responsible.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we, you know, if we drop the ball and we got something wrong, then, you know, then it's on us to hold ourselves accountable and either for the correction or update the story, what have you. And if it's something that is along the lines of, well, you left this out, then
right.
Yeah.
Then, you left me out.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. That's usually
right.
And, you know, we just leave stuff in the, I mean, we're not a deposition in a courtroom. And people don't understand. Sometimes we'll talk to 10 people, but we'll use 2. And you just have to carry it back to your organization and just say, you know, that helped them understand the issue more and the background. And I'm sure next time, but there's a huge difference. What Shannon and Steve said about if we get something wrong, there isn't a legitimate mainstream media outlet that doesn't want to correct that because it says, we're transparent, we hold you guys to, we wouldn't ask you to do something that we wouldn't do ourselves. But to not put, there's a lot of ego, say, with titles. Executive Vice President of the Department of Public Health. This
yeah,
is
we're
going to
shorten that.
Yeah, we're going to say of Cook County Public Health Department. Because I only have so much space. And I can spend, academics are the worst, assistant professor of this. You know, I'm going to say Dr. So-and-so at the University of Chicago Hospital. Because I'd rather take 4 more lines to talk about what you do than what your title is. So maybe you can help them understand that.
In the back, and also, if you could also introduce yourself, your name and affiliation without going, you know, more than 4 lines. Thank you.
Learned the most about working with media is that you think upside down to what we learned. So when you write for academic work, we all learn in university, you start with introduction, you go to your methods, and you go to your discussion, then you get your conclusion. You have to flip that.
Yes.
You have to put the conclusion in the first two sentences. And when I first broke that mock up and I went to the managing editor and came back with a big X to it, she said, this is great content, now just turn it upside down. I had no idea what she meant because I'm so programmed to think in this way that feeds towards the end. But once you learn to think upside down like that, it's actually a wonderful way to write.
Yeah.
And in fact, what you do is you take your friend's email and you say, wait, that's the start of an op-ed. Because they've said something that's annoyed them right off the bat, and then you turn that around into an op-ed, and it's a wonderful way to get stuff published. I mean, you like that. That's from what I've learned.
Right, right here, you've had your hand up for a while. Introduce yourself and a concise question.
Yes, my name is Jerry Mao with the Monday Campaign. And my question is, do you even care about press releases, or would you prefer to have individual pitches?
We care about press releases, but most of them are really kind of useless. I can't tell you that in 2015 how many check presentations and ribbon cutting that we get. And I want to say this, but when was the last time you saw a ribbon cutting photo in the Chicago Tribune?
Or a fundraiser getting covered.
Fundraiser, a gala, a benefit. You're much better off. If you want to do that press release, that's great. But tell me that gala, if it's raising money for some, I don't know, say Home for Unwed Mothers or something like that, tell me something about it. And then I will try deep in the story to say, which will be holding its annual gala. I mean, most of us really, we realize you've got stuff you've got to do. Well, we are very collaborative, but the story isn't, what's driving the story, if it's the gala, it's not going to get you. We don't have society sections anymore, or things like that. So.
Very rarely the news that we find is going to be found in that press release. I mean, the press release might give us the attention, it might spark our attention, but oftentimes if we delve into it, we're going to find the actual news outside of what we've written.
Well, and also I think another thing that goes, so we're like breaking news from a public health governmental organization. I think press releases are good to kind of get a headline out there. But what goes through my mind often when I see a press release, it's not just like I'm going to be reporting this 3 minutes later on the radio, is if they give this to me, everybody else has it. And so a lot of reporters are interested in doing something enterprising. They're interested in uncovering something new. So if you want like a big, hefty sort of feature story, press release is not going to be the way you're going to get it. You're going to get headlines. So with those, you're going to want to develop a one-on-one relationship with the reporter.
Okay, actually, I just need your hand up.
I'm Mary Jo Oates-Rickenberg. I'm a research scientist at an organization called Childrens. And my question
is, great job.
Oh, my question is specifically for Dr. Girdle, and you had mentioned something about how blogging isn't necessarily academic currency, and I'm curious to see if you think that might change in the near future. And my basis for that question is that my organization, we are very strongly encouraged to blog as frequently as possible, and it's considered part of our thought leadership. And I, not once in my year and a half there at that organization, have been pushed to publish in a peer-reviewed academic journal, but the blogging is so important to us. So do you think academia might eventually consider blogging to be?
Absolutely, and I hope so, and I think unofficially, I mean, it does not. So our dean like loves this, right? And a lot of like my faculty, they think it's great. But I think, you know, when it comes down to, you know, tenure, promotion, and review guidelines, there's nothing. It doesn't fit in any bucket. And if it did fit in a bucket, it would fit in the service bucket, which doesn't really count that much anyway. So I mean, I think things need to change on paper. Especially because academics, you know, we like to see what's on paper and then work toward that. I think there's kind of a personality thing. But I think it's generally respected. I just think it needs to change officially, and then behavior will change. I think it's going to change.
I'm going to say one thing. Childrens, I've gotten more great stories off of them. And when Jonathan was telling about a personal anecdote, I'm going to tell you
someone who a researcher, they usually talk very wonky and stuff like that, told me a personal anecdote that gave way to a great story. I don't know if she's still there. Her name was like Natalia Payne or something. Okay.
She's director of research operations. She's still there.
Oh, okay. And she did a blog called The Worry Clock. And it was about things that parents worry about. And she this was the personal anecdote that hooked me from the get-go. She said, I was expecting my first baby, and I was going around the house cutting all our blind cords. And my husband looked at me like I was nuts and said, how many kids die a year from hanging on their blind cords anyway? And she goes, huh, I'm a researcher. I should find that out. And so she did this and found like none. I mean, or just so few. That was one of those things that people did. But she did it in such an accessible way, this worry clock. It was like, how many minutes out of every hour should you devote to worry about this? So, like, people worry about abductions, and, you know, we all know that those are primarily custody cases. People are not getting snatched out of Home Depot, and people are not do not want to take your kids. Believe me, I have tried. I really tried. But she found that, like, swimming pools that didn't have, you know, fences around them, that was, like, 15 minutes out of every hour. That was, so she put that into that, so accessible, like people might not, their eyes might glaze over percentages. But if you know out of every hour, what should you worry about? A quarter of it is swimming pools, because the data says backyard drownings are a huge reason, a huge cause of fatalities. Of course, the worry clock changes with age. You know, if you have beginning drivers at 16, you know, that's going to probably be 45 minutes out of your hour. But the fact is that she took something that was very wonky and data-driven. And I used it multiple times. I used it not long ago with Halloween, because the razor blades and needles and stuff, and, like, there was no, I mean, that didn't even account for 1 second out of an hour. So helping debunk public health myths is as important as, you know, the car seats, the, you know, where you should put your word.
I think we have time for about two more questions. I've seen your hand second from the left back there.
Hi, I'm people. I'm here for you to see Chapel Hill. This has been phenomenal. We just had these conversations in the seminar last week, so thank you all so much. I wonder, can you kind of back to the first question about what you do after
I think there's two things I would say to that. Most journalists will not let you see their story beforehand. It's an ethics thing. But what you can do is you can say to them, and if you ask them for that, they're going to think that you're trying to, like, make sure that they're portraying you the way you want to be portrayed. But what you can say is, feel free to call me up and go over the facts after you bring that. I'm happy to review things with you. And I'll take people up on that. And that's different than giving someone a draft. The second thing is, the more you can, it gets back to what I said when I was talking to Tony, and the more you can simplify up front, the less I'm going to be fumbling with that on my own, right? So if you can tell me the big, nuanced, long story, but then you can summarize and give me a simplified nugget, we're going to be in better shape. More in your hands, who knows it best?
And just building on what Shannon said, I know probably a lot of your bosses are not media friendly, and you have to kind of convince them why this is a good idea. When you're working with mainstream media, I mean, nobody up here is the Inquirer or anything like that. You have to believe that we are as invested in getting that story right. I am, where I work, the number of corrections I have a year goes into my job review. So we don't care just about getting it. We want to get it accurately. And I am absolutely manic about calling people back and saying, do I have this quote right? Because
if it's totally different, exactly what Shannon said, if someone says, can I review the story? No, nobody's going to let you do that. But if you say, would you call me and just make sure that, you know, that it's what I intended? Okay, totally. You know, we both want the same thing. And you have to let your bosses know if they're not media friendly, that just exactly how we started this, that awareness builds action, action drives grants, everything. If there was a sapphire under this table and nobody knows it, what good is it? So the public has a huge appetite for health news. If not as a parent or an adult child who has senior aging parents or a sister or a friend, there's hundreds of stories, health stories, every single day. And that idea that we don't want to talk to the media, then we'll just go on to, because there are plenty of agencies that want to get their story out there and they know the importance of it. So train your bosses that it's a good thing.
A couple of other quick tips on that I'd say is if it's something really complicated, like it's research that's hard to grasp, have them say it back to you. Which, I mean, I know that maybe sounds a little paternalistic, but I actually think it's useful to say, like, can you say that back to me so I make sure that we've understood it? And also warn them about any pitfalls. If there's something people are consistently getting wrong, go ahead and say, you know, this is something that's hard to get, so I just want to make sure it's really clear.
Time for one more question. I want to get from this side of the room because I have not reached you.
My question is
actually
for people who are new in the organization.
If you have a particular story, you can pitch it, but if you're trying to develop yourself as a source, I think it's okay to ask reporters to meet you for coffee and just sort of tell them what you're working on. Reporters may not have time, but sometimes if you catch them during a downtime, they'll do. Like, there's a source who I think is going to be useful to me. I'll go and I'll sit down with them and talk for an hour just to kind of get a sense about what kind of things I could call them about later. You guys do that?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think the face-to-face approach is... it's important. I mean, if a person is introducing themselves to me as a potential source for the first time, then I always want that face-to-face contact with them, kind of establish where they're coming from. Aside from that, I guess, if you introduce yourself, like say if you only can introduce yourself through phone or email, or such, send out an email and then follow up with a phone call, just, have a conversation. Take maybe 5-10 minutes just to kind of talk and see if you'll be able to get along.
But be sure when you do meet with someone, because time is our most precious commodity, you really have something to say. Like, I've got 3 story ideas. I'm wondering if any of these kind of push your hot button. And we'll tell you right away. We know what a good story is. And I think Jonathan on one of his slides mentioned about, the wonkiness and... every organization knows who the people are who can take really complex research and make it accessible, and they know who, if I'm interviewing a neurosurgeon at University of Chicago, there's a reason I went into English and not math and science. I mean, there are people who can really speak in a way that's accessible. The example I just used about the cord, I've talked to gastroenterologists about acid reflux, and talk about something as simple as how a wedge pillow can make people get that, not eating too late and stuff like that, and how this is a huge problem, and that it could lead to esophageal cancer, which I never knew. This guy was like one of the international experts on GI issues, but he talked in a way that was, as someone said, what would you say if you met somebody at a bar, or you wouldn't start with, the dry research. You say, oh my God, did you know that you could, if you're eating tacos late at night and you get a lot of, acid reflux, that could lead to cancer? And then people, you get their attention with that. And so that's the kind of thing that are simple little tweaks that will help people live their life just a little bit better. I happen to be a fan of the dark chocolate tweet, but been everywhere lately. But you know, great. Tell me how everybody is packing their lunch or doing something. If there's one little change, I love that. Art Magazine does a great job this month. They've got 50 easy ways to live your life healthier. So little digestible bits, always good.
Well, let's have a round of applause for all of you.